Okay, I'm gonna get started, and hopefully, we don't need this, I guess. I'm just gonna speak really loudly. We're gonna get started, and hopefully more people will come from the siren call of my voice. I'm Leanna Kay from City TV's Ed's Night Party, 11:35 on City TV. And pretty much I begged to be a part of this Women in Comics Symposium because I just thought it was such an amazing thing to have happen. So, hi, and this is why I've shoehorned my way into this panel. So I'm going to be introducing the wonderful, talented, brilliant women that you've come here to hear speak. Our keynote speaker has the distinction of being dubbed the comic book industry's leading blogger. She has written numerous articles about the comics industry and founded the online column The Beat. She also writes a print column called Hey Kids Comics, which can be found monthly in the Comic Buyer's Guide. A former editor at DC Comics, she oversaw the development of the still-as-yet-unpublished Big Book of Wild Women. That's not in her official bio. I did my own web research. Her take-no-prisoners attitude, fearless journalism, and sometimes controversial opinions make her a bright light among women in comics, even if, according to her blog, she doesn't like Toronto spring weather much. Please join me in welcoming our keynote speaker, Heidi McDonald.
Job of research. So I'll try to speak up here. I guess everyone can hear me. I'd just like to say welcome everyone to the Women of Comics Symposium, and really I want to thank Peter Fisico and Peter Dixon and Kevin Boyd for putting this together, because I think it's about time someone took advantage of the Women of Comics. So. You know, and this really couldn't be more timely also, because there are so many amazing women doing so much amazing work now, and you know, it really makes a cliche like you've come a long way, baby, spring to mind. And I was talking to another one of the participants the other night, and she was saying how sometimes she doesn't necessarily like to be lumped in with the Women of Comics, you know, as a group, because it's true, it's limiting. But then we were both saying that there's just so much difference between what the creators of this symposium are doing. I mean, it's not a limitation at all, it's more an invitation to, you know, a whole new realm of creativity. So, you know, to see the people gathered here and what they've achieved is amazing. However, as the minority in any field, I do think it's important to remember that no matter when you've reached a plateau, you still have to fight beyond the plateau. And I don't mean to be a downer, but I think there's always things that still kind of get your motor going, I guess. And thinking about what has happened, there was recently the Masters of American Comics show in Los Angeles, which was this incredible academic museum recognition of comics, and there was 15 artists in it, and they were all men, and I wouldn't argue with the inclusion of any of them in there, or to say that those weren't the 15 people who should have been in there. There's a lot of articles written about why there were no women included, but you know, it was a great show. It was coming to New York, hope to be able to see it. After that, there was a show in New York called Speak, Nine Cartoonists, that was put together by Todd Hignite of Comics Art Magazine, and that included nine wonderful, incredible artists who hadn't been in the Masters of America comic show, and all of them were men also. And, you know, I mean, they were all great artists, but I was like, isn't there a room for Mary Fleener or Carol Tyler or Jessica Abel or Julie Doucet or Phoebe Gluckner or Renee French? I mean, isn't there room for one, 10, maybe it could have been 10, I don't know. But, you know, they're all great artists. And then, after that, I ran into a colleague of mine who has a book coming out that's about unsung cartoonists of the 20th century. So by now, I was beginning to wonder a little bit. So, and he's a friend of mine. I wasn't meaning to embarrass him, but I just said, you know, I gotta know, are there any women in your book? And he said, no, but I explain why. And I said, what about Rose O'Neill? What about Nisa McMahon? What about Jackie Orms? What about Lily Renee? None of them? None of them? And he's like, he had a reason why none of them were in the book. You know, all the great moments here. I'm sure there are legitimate reasons. And then I was like, wow. Because you're always hearing, you know what, now there's no boundaries. Now there's no boundaries for women in comics. Everything's good now, you know? And I'm like, so up until 2006, there was never one woman who did anything. Wow. So, but you know, I don't believe that. I just don't believe that. I think there's been a lot of great things done by women prior to 2006, and I think we should be questioning why they're not included in these books. So I wrote this down last night, so I'm going to read it. So while I stand here proud to be a member of this community and proud to see so many incredibly talented women making their voices heard, I'm going to throw in a little warning, too. You have to stay the course and you have to be a loudmouth. You have to, the reality is that women are also homemakers and wives and mothers and girlfriends, but you're an artist also, and it's very difficult to do any of those things. And to be both of those or all of those or one of them may entail sacrifice, hardship, and many late nights. In fact, it will. And I'm not saying this for a mythical women's movement or women in comics. I'm just saying that as an artist of any kind, you have to be a loudmouth. And make sure people know that you're out there. Because otherwise, you're going to get left out of those books. You have to. You have to make sure they know you're there. I'm very proud to be speaking before a spotlight on Ramona Freyden. Through her professionalism, artistry, and talent, she set a standard for all of us to live up to. And Ramona has definitely shown the way in her own graceful, dedicated manner and make it a little easier for us. And Ramona, you have always been an inspiration to me, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I thank you, those of you just finding their way from the bottom of my heart. This first Women of Comics Symposium may be the first of its kind, but surely won't be the last. Finally, it is safe to say that being a woman of comics isn't a limitation, but an invitation to a world without boundaries. Thank you.
Just to let everyone know, tech may come in here at some point to look at the microphone, because it's not supposed to be the old-fashioned projection theater type. Now we get to our main panel for the 50 minutes. I'm going to introduce our moderator first. She's an accomplished woman in her own right, a writer and cartoonist with a degree in journalism from none other than Carleton University. Our moderator is the creator of the Eternal Romance comic book, and her comic scripting has appeared in Elvira, Mistress of the Dark from Claypool Comics. She's also written for Animation Magazine and currently contributes to Animation World Network and VFX World Comics.
There we go.
World.com. She is former editor of the Canadian Toy Testing Council's Toy Report and former managing editor of WizardWorld.com. She also writes prose fiction. Her short story, The Power Lunch, is published in Bell Book and Beyond, an anthology of witchy tales. She is a 1993 Aurora Award winner for curating a 60 Years of Superman exhibit. She has served as a judge for the Eisner Awards and for the Canada Council for the Arts. This woman has truly left her mark on many facets of the comic book industry. Ladies, oh yeah, you two gentlemen, please welcome our moderator, Janet Hetherington.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're all tricky that
it
way.
It works, it works. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm really honored to be asked to be the moderator of this panel because I, too, am a huge fan of Ramona's work. I particularly loved Metamorpho, and of course, Super Friends is another wonderful title that was one of the things that made me fall in love with comics. And of course, I have many questions to ask you. And one of course, what I'd like to know is how did you become a working artist? I understand that your father worked for Elizabeth Arden.
No, he was is this working?
Yep.
Oh, it is.
So, yeah.
He was a lettering man, commercial lettering man, and he designed the Elizabeth Arden logo.
Oh, I see.
And,
okay.
And a number of other well-known ones, I think, Lord and Taylor and some of the others. And he wanted me to be an artist. He decided I was going to be an artist, you might say. So that's really, he headed me in that direction.
So did you actually go to school to study art? Or?
Yes, I did. I went to Parsons School of Design in New York for a year, and then I went to the Art Students League for 3 years and did mostly figure drawing while I was there, which I recommend to everybody who wants to get into comics, to learn to draw the figure. Not learn to make buttons and flashing lights and things like that, but learn to really articulate a figure.
So how did you move from studying and then finally end up in comics?
Well, I when I got out of art school, I had no idea what I was going to do. It was a fine arts school, actually, so I was thinking, you know, about painting, but I really wasn't very good at it. And I married a cartoonist. I guess that's the short answer. he was trying to get into the New Yorker at the time, and we had a friend who was drawing comic books or inking or lettering, I think, lettering comic books, George Ward. He ended up working for Walt Kelly, I believe. And he kept telling us about this Joe Manili person that he knew who was making a fortune drawing comics, you know. So they urged me to draw some samples. It never occurred to me that I would, you know, to be a cartoonist. But I'd always read comic books, comic strips when I was a kid, the old newspaper strips. So I was, you know, it was in my blood, you might say. I read them avidly. So I made up a page of samples. I went out and bought comic books maybe and read them for about 2 weeks to see what was out there. And I made up a page I think it was Western vignettes, action, you know, drawings. And I got a job. You know, I took everywhere I went, they hired me. It was bizarre. I thought, what's the matter with this occupation? I didn't know anything about comics or drawing. I mean, you know, make drawing a scene or inking or anything. But I was lucky, I guess.
What kind of materials were you using? I mean, all the comics they're still done oversized, and for the most part, although I don't know if it's changing with the technology, but everything was oversized. Did you know that you had to do the large drawings? And
well, somebody told me what page size or what proportions, I think. I don't know who did. I guess when I got a job, they gave me some paper.
Okay.
That's it. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know whether I should use a pen or a brush or just nothing. I mean, I'd never even composed scenes really, so it was bewildering. Somebody brought me an Aquaman page that they from way back, you know, in the 50s. It was this an inside page. And it must have weighed 5 pounds with pay stubs and white out. And I mean, it was just, I had such a terrible time when I started out.
Were you working from scripts? Full scripts, so they basically outlined what you had to draw for each panel?
Just roughly.
Roughly,
no,
okay.
Not much description, mostly just dialogue, which was enough, really.
Oh,
A lot of people objected when writers got very, you know, loquacious.
Detailed.
Yeah, right. It's better to just think. I think if the words don't do it, nothing will do it, you know, the dialogue and the captions.
I know this is sort of a technical question, but how did you determine how much room to leave for the letterer to put the balloons in?
It wasn't easy. Very often the heads got cut off. You know? I still have trouble with that. That's really hard. And now they've changed the sizes, so it's very confusing.
You mean the size of the page or the size of the balloons?
The size of something is different.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I think the balloons are smaller or something, aren't they?
As a rule,
I think. I got in the habit of leaving a lot of space for the balloons.
Well, they should have lots of places to plunk it in then.
They should, if they do it. I remember when I was doing Brenda Starr, I'd leave a lot of space, and it was such a sloppy operation. They would just leave the spaces. If the balloon didn't fill the space, there'd be these blanks. You know, they just didn't have any staff, I guess, or something.
Well, you've certainly drawn a number of memorable characters. You mentioned Aquaman. But I understand you had a hand in co-creating Aqualad.
Yeah, I did that, yeah.
So now, he hasn't really changed that much over the years. He's sort of got that dark, curly hair and all of that. Did you also sort of determine what the colors of his uniform are going to be?
Not the colors, I don't think, just the uniform itself.
Yeah. So, and I guess, he had bare legs too, didn't he? And little trunks.
Yeah. did they
give you parameters or idea of where they wanted to go?
I don't know. I mean, it just seemed obvious, right?
Okay.
You put him in tights and little socks or whatever those things are.
Now, if, for example, if you were being given Aqualad to design today, knowing the kinds of materials that are out there, like wetsuits and flippers and all of that, would you approach it maybe in a different manner?
No, because, it's hard to take me and transpose me into now because,
okay.
You know, but it seems to me that an Aqualad wearing a wetsuit is ridiculous. He breathes water, you know. I mean,
good point.
I don't know. It's just, you can't get too logical in this business.
I mentioned earlier that Metamorpho was one of my favorite characters, and it was funny because I picked up that big anthology that they recently reprinted, all the early issues, and one of the things that struck me was Sapphire Star.
Stag.
That Sapphire was a Sapphire Stag. I'm thinking
Brenda Star.
That's
yeah.
Right. I'm getting mixed up. But she was sort of the Paris Hilton of her day,
yeah.
Wasn't she? She used to drive around that big car. With
yeah.
But I never quite understood because her father really hated Metamorpho, but wanted her to marry a monkey. I mean, what was up with that? Did you have any hand in the scripting
of this? I don't think that he really did want her to marry Java. I mean, I think that he was just pitting one of them against
okay.
the other, you know, because everybody was so nasty in that mm-hmm. strip, you know. They were always fighting and tearing at each other's throats, and it was fun. I mean, I liked that. Because it was characters that were interacting. They weren't just punching each other like good chasing evil. They had, to an extent, they had motives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that much more fun than drawing superheroes, you know, standard superheroes.
He also was kind of an unusual hero in that he had to change his shape, and he was supposed to be representing all these different
elements. Yeah.
Exactly. So did you have to do a lot of research to sort of?
No, I mean, it was just pretty obvious. No, George Kashdan was the one who did the research. He was the editor,
mm-hmm.
and he came up with the idea, and he was a science fan, you know, so he came up with all the chemical combinations, and I've been told they were fairly accurate from people who, a couple of people have come up and told me that they became chemical engineers from reading Metamorpho. but I didn't, all I had to do was make it sort of look like something
right.
was happening.
Right.
You know?
And now you also drew, I was supposed to ask about Metamorpho one more thing. How many issues, do you remember how many issues you worked on?
Yeah, I did four.
You did four?
I did the first four, yeah, and I did the first eight covers.
Because one of the things was, when I picked up the collection, it just struck me that the rest of the issues that, I mean, you created the house style for that book because
mm-hmm.
because you're looking and it's like, I thought they were all by you, to be quite honest, because they look like
yeah.
your work. So you created a very distinctive style there. Did you do that on purpose, or is just drawing the way you draw?
Yeah, I just drew it, you know. It was, I mean, my drawing changes depending upon the script.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Haney's script just called for a certain kind of a thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It just brought that out. And no, I never thought of creating a style. I know some people can do that, but I couldn't do it if I tried consciously, you know.
Now, you've worked, obviously, for DC, and but you also worked for Marvel on The Cat.
Yeah, I did one
did
issue,
one of
but
those,
they
okay.
killed it. It was
oh.
on the way out when I did the issue, yeah.
Well, was that something, like when you got the opportunity just to do that one issue, was that something that you enjoyed doing, or?
No.
No.
No, I'd been retired for about 7 years. I had a baby, and so I thought she could use a little attention, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Thomas.
Yes.
Called me up just out of the blue in the 70s. It was the women's movement, you know, and it was a women's strip, and I think they just wanted a woman to illustrate it. So he called me, and I went in. I was completely rusty. I hadn't drawn for 7 years. And the worst part was they just gave me a paragraph
oh.
and said, now go home and draw the 17-page story. It was, you know, shocking. And I did it. I mean, I mm-hmm. drew it, but my mind was wandering. I didn't know what the plot was. I think a lot of people love to draw that way, but
mm-hmm.
for me, it's just, first of all, I think it's a ripoff. You're getting a writer and an artist for the price of one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is just like, you know, just an opinion I have, that I think it spawned together with the comic market, you know, the collector's market. I think it spawned a lot of drawings that aren't telling stories, but that are really great for selling at conventions. They're like posters almost, and I think if you let artists have their way, that's going to happen. And I think that storytelling suffers for that eventually. I mean, not to say that they didn't do some absolutely marvelous things that way, but I think in the long run, it's not the best way to produce a really working story.
Hmm. So, I know, in the past, you would have preferred to see a fuller story treatment
a
than...
A script,
yeah.
Yeah,
script.
You know.
Yeah, that would help.
Because I think writers know how to write, you know, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to me. But it just goes with the whole Marvel mystique. I mean, if you went up to the Marvel offices in the 60s or in the 70s after having worked at DC, you would notice a drastic difference just in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was completely free form, whereas DC was all the offices were in rows and there was doors on every office and there were men in suits, you know, behind the desks, and at Marvel it was just mayhem, you know. So, it's, you know, I think it just went with the style.
Now, you've also worked on many other comics, again, a lot with DC, and Super Friends. How did you get involved with the Super Friends? That was when the TV, the animated show,
yeah,
was on the air.
Yeah. Well, I think that, Paul Levitz or somebody who, I guess it was Nelson Bridwell, was editing that. They were looking for an open, you know, a girl artist,
mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, and an open kind of a style that would appeal to young readers. So I do tend to draw more in patterns, so I mm-hmm. think that's why they picked my drawing.
And did you have to work from the animation style guide?
No. It was just a regular script, I think Bridwell was writing them, Nelson Bridwell, and he was such a stickler for detail. Oh my God. And he would design a lot of the characters. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Super Friends, but there were a lot of kind of mythical characters, and he meticulously designed every costume. It drove me crazy.
Really?
Actually. Yeah, he was just, and that's, I mean, he was interested in that, and he was interested in the story. And not the art particularly. Mm-hmm. He wasn't one of those, an editor that cared about what the drawing looked like, as long as the details were right, you know.
That's actually an interesting point. Did they come back to you with changes? Like, did they, after you turned in your art pages, did they come back and say, well, we'd like this changed?
No, I never had any corrections.
Really?
No, I never did with Brenda Starr either, except, they were always looking out for anything that was off color.
Okay.
That's what I mean. I used to try to trap them. One time I put three fingers on somebody or three arms, you know, just to see if anybody would notice. They never cared about that. It was just any kind of off color material.
So there's pages out there somewhere that.
Oh, yeah.
We have to find those.
Yeah. I think Dale Messick used to do that too. She used to have a fight with the editor. She always wanted to put a belly button on Brenda, and they always whited it out. And I think she married Brenda and Basil so that she could put them in bed together,
right,
you know,
right.
Just to get it back at them.
Now, you did Aquaman and Aqualad, but you just can't seem to get away from those water heroes, because I understand you also did Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy.
Oh, yeah, for Nickelodeon.
So how did that come about?
I don't know. They just called me one day and asked me if I wanted to do that. There was a I like working for Nickelodeon. They're fun. Yeah, they're just goofy, in a nice, innocent sort of a goofy way. So, yeah, that I did that and a few other little fillers for them. thing called Lunch Lady.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds great.
It is. It's just goofy.
Did in that that mermaid man, I didn't get a chance to read that story, but was SpongeBob in it, or was it focusing like was?
No, it was merman. Mermaid was his man. Mermaid man and
Barnacle Boy.
Barnacle Boy. Yeah.
It was I think that is, no, those are actually characters.
They're takeoffs.
That's right, they're takeoffs.
Characters.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just a little spoof of that whole genre.
That was so fun. Now, I understand that when you were working at DC, it was at a time when you didn't always get your artwork back.
You didn't at all. Not in the beginning. They just warehoused it and then burned it or something, you know? And the people who are smart or who happen to like comics grabbed a whole lot of them, you know? And I know Marie did that. She just has a treasure trove of things that she got from the... I don't know if she'd want me to tell everybody this. I mean, nobody wanted them, so she would take them home because she loved them, you know? She has all these marvelous originals. But I didn't get any back until I came back in the 70s, I guess. Yeah, they never got any of the Aquaman ones back. Although I've seen them around, so somebody got hold of them. And then in the 70s, I got all my Metamorphos back, and I sold them all at an auction for $1.75 a page. Isn't that awful? And then I sold all of my other originals, or a lot of them, to some dealer in the 80s. I mean, what did I know? I didn't know that they would ever be worth anything. It is sad, though.
Did you keep any art? Like, did you keep Brenda Starr art? Or?
Oh, I've got an attic full of Brenda's. Anybody wants one?
I have them framed up on the wall.
Oh, there's 15 years of Brenda's.
Oh, yeah.
I bring a few to every show, you know, and sell a couple, yeah.
Well, that's great.
People used to buy them when I was working on the strip. They would come and buy them from me for wedding presents.
Oh, yes,
Brenda strip.
Right. Well, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about working for Brenda Starr. I understand you started drawing the strip right after Dale Messick left.
She still worked on it for about a year after I took over.
And so how did you get involved with the project?
Well, I think again it was the women's, I mean, they were looking for a woman to replace Dale, obviously, in that strip. So they combed the hustings, you know, for about a year looking for somebody, and then they finally found me, you know. And so I started in 1980, I guess. And she worked on it. Excuse me, she continued to write it, I think, for another year. And Dale had never obviously worked from a script because she just did her own drawing and writing. And so she would send, she didn't send me scripts, she sent me pages of layouts of drawings, you know, all laid out with the, you know, with the balloons. And I was having an identity crisis, you know, all the time I was having to draw from over her drawings. It was really, it sounds like it might be easier, but it was really difficult I felt like I was just being a copyist or something. And then when she stopped writing, excuse me, I began to get scripts again. Although the writers that I had after that, I had two writers, it was not easy to get material out of them. They'd send me a page at a time, you know, and I never knew what the story was, and I couldn't remember after doing the Sunday page what the dailies, what Brenda had been wearing. I mean, it was just a nightmare, and that went on for 15 years. I could never get a script out of any of those writers. I think they have trouble writing, don't they? Is that true?
Yes, it is true, actually.
I mean, it's a real problem.
I guess when you were working, did you have access to photocopiers? Like, so, because you were saying about you didn't remember what she was wearing. I mean, so you wouldn't have that reference to go back to?
No, and I never remembered to copy it either.
No.
And then once in a while they would call me and they would say, this dress is not, you know, doesn't match that. Yeah, that they would edit that.
Mm-hmm. So when you were doing that kind of strip, what was the hardest part about it? Because I know that you've only got so many panels and you have to tell so much story. Did they ever ask you to draw things? Like, I mean, I think, you know, she did a lot of, she was pretty adventurous, so there was a lot going on. Were there things that you really had a hard time drawing, or?
Well, I tell you, the two writers I had on Brenda really were not comic book writers.
Okay.
They did not really know how to write for graphic, you know, for mm-hmm. pictures. And so that was always a problem. They were more interested in their dialogue
okay.
and, you know, and whatever. I think they grew up on TV, you know, watching oh. television. So they would give me a close-up. And there were this person would be saying seven different things that called for seven different expressions and you know, that kind of thing. And it was just, you know, it was really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't fun to do. And the story strips, I mean, they're printing them so small now,
right.
first of all, that
mm-hmm.
you don't want to put as much detail in as you would otherwise. And you're limited in the format. If you're used to drawing comics, you get this big page and you can, you know, move mm-hmm. the panels around, and so you can't do that. And it was just not fun. After a while, I found I was just doing more and more close-up shots and just, you know, getting mm-hmm. more and more bored with it. So that's, you know, that's my experience. And then, of course, I was always fighting the syndicate because they're such criminals.
They're hard to deal with.
Dale swore that she was getting a little pension, which half of which was coming out of my paycheck, by the way. And she swore she was going to live forever because she hated them so much just to keep getting that pension. So she, you know, she did pretty well. She got to be 100.
Wow.
And, you know, I heard from the woman who's drawing it now that when she died, she's not getting any more money. They'd been taking the money out of her paycheck,
oh.
but now she's not getting the extra. I shouldn't even talk about it. It just makes me furious.
Oh, dear.
I waited till the last second to quit so they would have trouble finding somebody else.
Oh, no.
Was that King Features?
No, it was Tribune Media. Hateful people.
Now, if you were starting in the business right now today.
God forbid.
I was just going to say, you know, is there anything that you would do different? Because I think it is a different business a little bit today, the comic book business. And I know you were also, you were married, you had, you know, you had kids, and so you were a superwoman at the time, you know, when you were building
the housework suffered a little bit.
Yeah. so you were building a career at that point. But you know, if for a female cartoonist that are coming into the business right now, like today, if you were one of those, is there anything that you would do that was different, or do you think that you
I would try to do graphic novels.
Okay.
I wouldn't even bother going into mm-hmm. comics because it's just hopeless. I mean, I think the young editors have taken over, and I don't think that they have, certainly they're not open to women's work very much, but I think that they're becoming more and more ingrown. So I think that graphic novels offers women much more opportunity
mm-hmm.
than comics do. And some of the work that's even in this little magazine,
yes.
I'm really impressed with it. It's wonderful stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason why their work shouldn't be out there as much, if not more, than the men's work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would think.
And is there a dream project that you wish you had worked on? Is there anything that you sort of thought, love to do that?
No, I don't think so. I did like a Plastic Man, something comic,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yes.
something pseudo-comic is what I wish that I'd been able to do all along.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'd done children's books, that's probably what I should have
mm-hmm.
done, you know, but I didn't, so.
Did you do work outside of comics too, illustration
no.
work? It was all strictly
no,
comics.
All comics, yeah.
Wow, that's really, I mean, it just sort of blows my mind that you would, basically when you were looking for work, you just sort of go into the offices and say, I'm looking for work.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
Yeah, I just brought samples around. I mean, I guess that I had talent for being a cartoonist, but it was nothing that I ever, I mean, I was reading some of the bios here,
yes.
you know, and
mm-hmm.
these women really, really, from the time they were children, wanted mm-hmm. to be cartoonists,
right.
you know. I never had that. I wish I had. I mean, I think it would have been really wonderful to be that excited about what you were doing. And I probably could have done more, you know, mm-hmm. with the what talent I have. But I just felt like, I mean, I was just a sort of a journeyman, mm-hmm. you know, making a living, basically.
When you were working on a strip for DC, how long did you have, on average, to... I mean, if you're doing a full book.
Yeah.
How long did you have to work on that?
I think
project?
I usually had... You know, it's hard to remember. I think I used to take about a month to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have done them a lot faster, but I would always, of course, put off till the last minute. Deadlines help.
<Yes. laughs>
They really do help. And, I mean, I could do a page, I could do 3 pages a day,
wow.
penciled and inked,
ooh.
If I had to. But otherwise, I would take a week to do a page,
right,
you know. And
right.
So it was just a matter of pressure, really, you know. How
right.
much time they gave me. It was always a mistake to tell me you had plenty of time. That was a disaster.
Were you all set up in your home, or did you have
yeah,
a studio?
I
oh,
had
you
a
had
little room where
you did,
I worked.
Yeah,
yeah a little what? Bitty, tiny cubicle.
Was that like off limits to the rest of the family, or
No. And my husband was a New Yorker cartoonist,
right.
and he had the big studio. You know,
oh, he had the big studio. Okay.
little
cubby hole,
yeah,
turning
right.
out comments.
I'm not telling anybody I was doing it.
Now, you told Comic Book Artist Magazine that with regard to superheroes, that you felt as if you were violating your nature when you were drawing
yeah.
muscle-bound types of characters. But you did also mention that you really enjoyed working with Joe Orlando on mysteries.
Yeah, that
and
was fun.
Yeah? So tell us a little bit about working
well,
on those.
Well, there
books.
Again, the mysteries were people who were interacting, and
mm-hmm.
there was humor in them. Joe had a sense of humor, and he was challenged by the code, and he knew
oh,
that
okay.
if the things were a little bit humorous, he could
yes.
get more past the code than he could get, you know,
mm-hmm.
otherwise. So. I enjoyed it for that reason. I was able to exaggerate and make things, you know, gruesome in a kind of a funny sort of a way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great editor. He was interested in artwork. No, I've never had another editor who cared about, had said a word about the artwork.
Really?
You know, they were interested in the stories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, I mean, he helped me tremendously with inking and, you know, just gave me a whole lot of instruction. And I really appreciated that. And I think I did... my best work, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, just art-wise under Joe.
Were those were shorter stories? Like they were sort of the anthology
yeah, six
books?
And eight pages,
right.
something like that.
So,
yeah.
and
yeah.
I guess it was easy, like, I mean, they're sort of like really punchy little stories.
Yeah, they were, and they were vivid. And the writers, you know, like, well, what, there was this one crazy guy, Michael somebody or other, he'd been in therapy for 25 years. I said, why were you in therapy so long? And he said, well, I have trouble with relationships. I said, seems to me you've been in one, you know, for 25 years. But he wrote this crazy stuff, you know, and one of his stories they actually killed. It was so gruesome.
Uh-huh.
But he and another, and a woman named Maxine Fabe, I don't know if you, do you know anything about her
no,
work?
No, I don't.
I think she ended up doing pornography, but I'm not sure. But she, her, the writing was so vivid, it was just effortless to illustrate it. And I just really enjoyed that
mm-hmm.
a lot. It was fun.
And did you work in any other genres as well? You mentioned that when you did your samples, they were Westerns. So.
Yeah, these were Westerns. And I think it was, I just remember that one page of Westerns.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any other Western comics, or was that?
I did a couple.
Yeah?
I did. The first thing I did was A Shining Knight. So
that's
it had
right,
a horse
yes.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Horses aren't easy to draw, are they?
I like to draw horses, yeah. I always drew horses when I was small.
Oh, yes.
You know? So that was okay for me. But, and then, you know, I did detective stories and there may have been a couple of romance things, but those were definitely on the way out
okay,
just when I came in, unfortunately, because I think that would have been fun for me anyway.
Right.
But then it became a man's medium, you know, and all the GIs came back from the war, and then it was all superheroes, you know, from then on. And every time, when I finally got to do Plastic Man and the mysteries, I was really happy, and then I could see the superheroes were coming back, you know, and I thought, oh my God, you know, my time is up. It was just awful. I just hated doing superheroes, you know, and all this smashing and banging, and it was so stupid. I mean, it's like... I mean, it's definitely men's fantasies, you know, like, conquering the world. Excuse me, I'm an American, but I have to say this. We've got this loony president who I think must have grown up on comic books. I'm not sure. I shouldn't do that, God. No.
Are you still drawing? Do you still
draw? I'd like to draw for, you know, sketches for conventions and and commission drawings.
Oh, mostly. Okay.
That's scripts I don't want to ever look at again. I mean, I've had, you know, but this is fun to be able to do what I want to draw, you know. And I take a lot more time with each drawing, so they're better drawings, I think, too.
So when people come up to you and they ask you to draw a character, do you sort of say, sure, just give me the reference, or there's some characters you won't draw?
No, I draw whatever they ask me to. It's hard, I mean, because some of these characters, I don't even know what they do, you know, but I draw them.
So if you're not aware of what their powers are, how do you create the scenario for them? So it's sort of like working from those scripts without a script.
Yeah, it is.
And to make it up. Now, are there any other media that you explore? Do you do painting or collage or anything?
I've been doing some watercolors, you know, stuff lately. But basically, I mean, I've been so impressed with the women's work in this little pamphlet because they're all working in color, you know, and it's just wonderful stuff. I really am so impressed with them. But I never did. No, I never cultivated any other medium. Yeah, I really was not that interested in being an artist.
No.
I know it's silly, but it's true. You know, I like to write much more.
Okay.
I mean, it's just not comic books, but I've been writing on a book. You know.
Oh, excellent. Things,
so that's what really grabs me, you know.
So even when you were doing the artwork, were you writing?
I have been working on some related stuff for a long time. Yeah.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
No, it's a nonfiction. It has to do with the Gnostic Gospels and Faust. It's very abstruse, you know, as you can see. But that kind of thing really interests me.
Now. Going back a little bit again to when you were first working with drawing superheroes, what characters did you enjoy drawing the most? Which ones?
Well, Metamorpho, because there again there were people, you know, interacting. Mm-hmm. Plastic Man I loved because it was so goofy. And the mysteries. Those were the three things that I enjoyed, And those were very brief. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I didn't work on those for very long, I probably should have been more aggressive and said, I want to do this and not that, but I didn't, so that was it.
I was wondering if anybody in the audience had some questions?
The writer you worked with for the mystery stuff, I think you said, was it Michael Fleischer?
Yeah. Michael Fleischer. Right. Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, I read some of that stuff. It's
he was pretty weird.
I thought so. What was your first, if you remember, what was your first paid assignment? Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was Shining Knight. That isn't true. I did three stories for Stan Lee up at Timely, when it was Timely Comics. Yes, that was the first. The first job I got, which I ended up sending the script back, was with Fox Features.
Okay.
They gave me a 12-page script, and then somebody told me they didn't pay. And besides, the script scared me to death, so I sent it back. And then I went up to Timely, and he gave me three, I think I did three stories for him, and the last one was a war story. It was during the Korean War, and it was terrible. My drawing was just so bad. I can't draw tanks and all that stuff. And this, so that was the last job I got from him. And then I went up to D.C. and then that's where I stayed for, that was my home.
Okay. And do you remember much about the other two stories that Stanley gave you?
I think probably another one was probably a war story.
Okay.
But I don't remember what the third one was.
All right.
So I guess the first two were okay, but the last one was not okay. And I had that same experience working for Stanley or Roy Thomas when I went back and did The Cat, and then I did a Fantastic Four, and I did... may have done one other thing, and that was it again. I mean, the chemistry never worked out with Stan Lee, or with Marvel Comics.
Who were you working under at DC when you first went to DC?
Murray Boltenoff.
Oh, okay.
He was the one who hired me.
Yeah.
He came out and he said, "Did you do this?" I always hate it when men do that. A girl did this?
What was he like to work for?
Oh, he was a gentleman.
Yeah.
A true gentleman. He was not very, he wasn't very talkative, forthcoming. I never knew what he thought of my work, beyond the fact that he would give me another script after I handed one in. And he was just a very reserved gentleman, sort of. And I worked for George Kashdan. He edited some things that I did, and then Joe Orlando, and that's about it up there. I didn't know too much. I did a job for Conagher, a war story again, which was a disaster. He said my tanks looked like Toonerville trolleys or something. I just don't, I don't like war. I don't like to draw war stories, and it was just never worked out, They should not put girls on war stories, I don't think.
Heidi.
You talked about how you could draw three pages in a day, but you waited until, why do you think artists do that? Why do you think?
Because it's hard. It's really hard, you've got this blank page, and now you've got to make pictures and it's just hard. I mean, that's all, don't you think?
Well, yeah, the blank page is hard, but procrastination just is, if you just sat down and did a little bit of it, and you'd be fine, but
That's too organized. I can't do anything on time or according to the rules or it always has to be a mess, and then I can put it together,
Being a cartoonist or a comic book artist and being married to a cartoonist or somebody in that profession, was your social circle, did you find that you hung out with other cartoonists? Or?
We hung out with New Yorker people.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Because we were out in Connecticut, and a lot of cartoonists were out there. So we basically hung out with the New Yorker people. And, some local friends.
Right.
But I didn't know anybody in the comic business except for the editors that I worked with. And I didn't know anything about the business. And I still don't. I was in a soup, unconscious soup.
When you went in, and because I'm still flabbergasted, you just walk in and you sort of say, okay, I'm ready for work, and they give you
silly.
Work.
It's ridiculous.
It was a work for hire arrangement, so it was basically per assignment type of thing?
Yes, that's right.
When you were doing something like Metamorpho, where you did the four issues, did you sign a long-term thing for that, or was it just this one, and the next
one? No, when George called me, I'd been retired, like I said.
Oh, that's right.
And
yes.
For a couple of years, and then he said, well, just get this thing started.
Oh.
So I agreed to do four issues, and that's what I did, and a few extra covers. And I had no idea, this is how little I knew. I had no idea that strip had taken off. Oh. And when I told George that I was going to quit, he suddenly offered me $100 a page.
Uh-huh.
But I was, you know, I had a child and I wasn't going to keep working. But I didn't know anything about what was happening and nobody ever told me anything. So that's how, you know, I was just drawing, you know, in my little studio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too bad.
In some cases, you mentioned that you did the penciling and the inking, but in some cases you just did the penciling?
Yeah. Most of the time. Well, I inked, what did I ink? The Mysteries and Aquaman. That's mm-hmm. about it. The other times I always had inkers, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you prefer just doing the penciling? Did you do tight pencils? I do
such tight penciling that inking almost seems redundant to me. It really does. So I know the inkers enjoyed working on my stuff.
Because it was all
there.
Yeah,
it was all there, yeah. Except for Vinnie Coletta. See, everybody laughs. I don't even have to say anything. Somebody told me that he would just take and erase background stuff because he didn't feel like inking it.
No.
And every face would be his face. You know, it was just hideous to have him ink your work. But he did do some of the stuff that I worked on.
Who are some of your favorite inkers to work with?
A fellow named Mike Royko, who went off to Disney. He did a Plastic Man for me that I thought was it was ecstatic to see somebody who really understood.
Mike Royer?
Is that it? Mike Royer. Yeah. And the minute he worked on my that one story, he went off, you know, disappeared. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, and I finally got an anchor, you know. But
he did a lot of Kirby stuff.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Beautiful stuff. Just Kirby stuff in the 70s.
Very sensitive guy, you know. And I liked Charlie, was it Parrish?
Parrish,
I have to ask everybody else. I liked his inking on Metamorpho. I think it gave mm-hmm. that strip the angularity, you know, that distinctive look that
yes.
it had. It was really nice inking.
Yes?
You mentioned that your husband was a cartoonist for The New Yorker. What were the dynamics living with someone else who was in a field related to yours? I know I'm experiencing that right now with my boyfriend.
I find that
we get along, we can work collaboratively, or in some cases we clash violently.
Are you in the same field exactly? I mean, both comics or what?
Pretty much. I'm more of the illustrator than he is.
Uh-huh.
We both work with illustration and graphic design, but we're both critical of each other, and that can either work well or work really badly. I'm just wondering how you were able to deal with that.
He was doing box cartooning. Or a gag, you know, single gag cartooning, and it's just a totally different field. And he thought of his own ideas and, you know, drew them too, but there was just no opportunity to clash, you know.
Even so, did you go to him for ideas? Or
no, in fact, he used to ask me to help him with his drawings. He had a horse to do or something. I have to do it. We used to argue about that, but that was it. No, we never had anything like
kind
that.
Kind of kept it separate.
Yeah.
Having done both comic books and comic strips, was there a medium that you preferred over the other?
Oh yeah, comic books,
yeah,
by far. Because, you know, the story strips are dead in the newspapers now. By the time I was doing Brenda, they were all being eliminated and they were being reproduced this big, and it just was not, it wasn't fun. And you'd color the Sunday page, and I remember I did my first Sunday page, I thought, oh my goodness, I was thinking about Kniff and, you know, the wonderful colors, the way they used to reproduce them. So I used about 57 colors. And when it came out in the Daily News, they'd used red, green, and yellow. I mean, that was it, you know, so I thought, all right, that's it, I'll do 7 colors from now on. And that's what I did. And you just keep pulling in your, you know, your... what do you say? Your hopes, your...
Yeah, oh, yes.
You know, it's just, it's very disillusioning. It's, you can feel it's a dying breed, sort of. The story strips, anyway, mm-hmm. not the gag-a-day strips.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember the first night, I was living in New York then, and I was walking up Park Avenue South, and it was a windy night. And the first time, the first day my strip came out in the Daily News, I'm walking along, and I step on a piece of paper, and there's my drawing under my foot. And I mean, it was all these things, you know, sort of conspired to make, to take the romance out of it. It was just really a grind doing this strip. And you can never get away from it. I mean, the deadlines are always there, 7 days a week, forever. And if I ever wanted to go on a vacation, I would have to either double time, you know, and go get way ahead, or I'd have to locate near a FedEx office somewhere, you know, so just take the work with me, which is what I did. Okay. Mm-hmm. My friends called me the prisoner of Brenda. It was horrible. So I don't recommend it.
Yeah. Did you always have to be about 3 weeks in advance with the strip?
Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, theoretically.
It was theoretical. I was always just scraping the deadline. Yeah.
Oh, I think we've reached the end of our time, so I'd like to thank you so much for sharing all your thoughts and expertise and memories with us today.
Thank you.
And you have a table here?
Yeah, I do.
So people can come by and see you at that time.
I'm out there.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.